You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, delicious friends, and welcome to Who Did What Now, the history podcast that's not your history class, with me, your host, Katie Charlewood, history harlot and reader of books. Hi, everybody. Did you miss me? I have been... Oh, wait. No, I haven't. That's a lie. I've been nowhere. I've been at home. I just took a week off from recording. I tried to put together an episode last week, but I was so run down and so exhausted and just not great. Like, I had this weird dizzy, like, as if my brain was sloshing about my head situation going on. And no matter what I did when I was trying to put the episode together, every time I tried to record, everything sounded wrong. Like, I don't know how else to put it. It sounded wrong. And so I scrapped that episode completely. I just decided to write a new one for this week. Because apparently I can't do anything typically at all. So I decided to do this. Murder, of course. Why not? But it's been a bit hectic because I've had to try and prepare a few episodes specifically to be released as I'm touring, because I don't want to like let people down, and I've got stuff that needs to go up on the Patreon as well. Like, I've got things scheduled, but there's a few like tweaks I need to do here and there, and it's just to make sure that content is consistent. I don't know if anyone's noticed, if you've been following me on the socials, like I haven't been as historically heavy there, and I've been doing my wee historical assistant. Currently it's the assistant to Henry VIII, which I make just for my own pure enjoyment. Like, it's just fun for me to do. And for the 2,000 people that watch those, I appreciate you. It was just a silly little thing I did in my mum's kitchen. I was like, this will be great. This will be fun. But yeah, getting the tour organised has been a bit hectic. And I'm travelling by coach a lot through the UK just because trains are crazy expensive and there's not a lot of regional flights happening, so I'm like, I'll just go on a bus and sleep, even though it's gonna banjax my back up a wee bit, but it'll be fine. But I'm getting a wee bit stressed now at this point because like the Glasgow show completely sold out, fabulous. Dublin's doing very well, Manchester's doing well, but Brighton, don't know what's happening in Brighton, but like Brighton is not selling as well as everywhere else. And I'm starting to panic because like I need to break even, lads. Like it's a lot. It's expensive to travel like into the country to fly in and do all this. And I had someone ask like, hey, are you going to be doing like a London, you know, Essex type area? And, you know, I answered honestly because it's me. And I was like, I don't know, because if I don't sell like 80% of my Brighton tickets, I probably won't be in the southeast of England for like another 2 years. Because if I'm going to make a loss from being in that area, like as it's shown historically, if I'm going to be a loss from being in that area, then it's not financially feasible for me to be in that area. Whereas like Newcastle, which isn't until November, like the Newcastle gig is selling like hotcakes. So it's a wee bit stressful. And I was chatting to like comedian Susie Russell. Susie Ruffle. Jesus. I was chatting to Susie and I was like, hey, any advice? Because like struggling in this area specifically. And she was saying to me, like, a lot of people who travel in, they find that their tickets don't really sell until like a much closer to the date, which is not helping my anxiety. But anyway, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, quit your jibber jabber and fact me. In fact you, I will. But first, we've got to get our source on. Sources are The Early Stuarts by Godfrey Davis, The Overbury Affair, The Murder Trial That Rocked the Court of King James I by Miriam Allen DeFord, The Trials of Francis Howard, Fact and Fiction at the Court of King James by David Lindley, Passion, Poison and Power, The Mysterious Death of Sir Thomas Overbury by Brian Harris. King James the Sixth and First by David Harris Wilson. And of course our favourites, history.com and biography.com. I'll sit in comfortably. Good. Then let's begin. So this is a story which has everything. It would be like a perfect, you know, 17th century whodunit. You know what I mean? Because this has, you know, a torrid love affair, political scheming, you know, a salacious scandal, and a poisoned tart. And you all know I love a tart, right? And there are three main players in this story. And there's a few side characters. Our three main players are Francis Howard, Robert Carr, and of course, Thomas Overbury. Now, there are some side characters, you know, like the King and Queen of England. It is wild. So let me start with Francis, because I'm going to start with the women, because I feel like it. Francis Howard was born on the 31st of May, 1590. That's right, we have a birthday for a woman in the past. Are you excited? Because I'm excited. Basically, Frances Howard, she is from good stock. I don't know how else to say this, but like she is from like two very noble families. Like they're very powerful. Like she's, I don't want to say a really good pawn, bargaining chip. She's a really good bargaining chip. She's perfect for a political alliance, right? Because she's, you know, well-educated. She's cute as a fucking button. Like she is awesome, effectively. And I don't know if it's her grandfather or her great-grandfather, I can't remember, but he was the last person to be executed by King Henry VIII. Now, I mean, it's not a great claim to fame, but it's kind of interesting to just like have that in your family tree. But yeah, she's doing well. Like she's well up there when it comes to sort of the nobility hierarchy. And when she's 13, she's married to one Robert Devereux, who is pretty decent historically in his own right. But when they get married, he's 13 and she's 14. Now, Robert is his father, grandfather, great-grandfather, grandfather. One of them, like on his paternal side, was Queen Elizabeth I's spy master, right? Like that's Walsingham. He was like fingers in many pies. He was ruling the roost. He was, you know, the person whispering in good Queen Bess's ear, right? His stepfather was Sir Robert Dudley, the Queen's favourite. The one who she was really mad about getting married. Yeah. Yeah. So again, very important sort of political family. Like, even if you take how he married into it, you know what I mean? But he's 13 and she's 14 and they get married and it's no Romeo and Juliet situation. It's not love at first sight. It's effectively a political union. It's a shake hands. Good. We're aligned now. Fabulous. You know? And that's how a lot of marriages in this time were. And It's actually pretty young to be married. Everyone thinks that like people got married like at 12 and 13 all the time, when that's really more the case of sort of higher people up in the nobility. Like, it's not lower down. Like, that's not a thing. And that's not what they did. But it was mainly just for alliances. Marriages weren't expected to be consummated. Like, they weren't expected. It happened on occasion. And it was really common for, like, younger girls and women to marry off to older men. I mean, reasonably, these two are basically the same age. There's a year difference, so fair enough. Now, because they're so young, they're like, they don't need to live together. They don't need to consummate the marriage. It's fine. So 1604, they get married. Bish, bash, bosh. Done. Now, at this point, they're like, you know what? Let's send Frances to court. Like, because I think her mum was a lady-in-waiting. Her mum or her grandmother was a lady-in-waiting for Anne of Denmark. Now, Anne of Denmark is pretty fabulous. So her and King James, they have their family, whatever. And once they have their children, there basically becomes this sort of agreement, effectively, where she goes, let me do what I want. Let me have my fancy clothes and spend all my money. Like, you don't judge me. And you can have as many boyfriends as you like. But here's like one stipulation here, bestie. They do not disrespect me. Like, you can have as many queens hanging around as you like, but I am the queen and they will show me some fucking respect. And James is like, super, absolutely, no worries, right? 100%.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
So, like, Anna Denmark is a badass bitch, and we're definitely going to cover her at some point, but yeah, so Lady Mayton. So Frances is brought to the Stuart court because she's, you know, of high society and she's married and it's decent for her to be there. Also, not really worried that the king's going to have a wandering eye on this one, obviously. Because his eyes are somewhere else. So Robert, at this point, he has been sent on a grand tour. Now, I mentioned this before. I think I mentioned it in like the Lizzie Borden episode, but this has been happening for a while. So the nobility, especially young men, were expected to travel on a grand tour, which is where they traveled around Europe, especially stopping off in Italy, because it was a thing. Probably because that's where like the Vatican is. Anyway, and you know, once the Renaissance happened as well, they're like, art, beauty, you know, la vie bohème, whatever. I know it's French, shut up. So he goes off on this tour and he's away for like 2 years. While he's away, he's not exactly chaste because he's a teenager gallivanting around Europe. So he comes back anyway 2 years later and he has smallpox. He's got smallpox and he's really ill.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for the New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
And his wife is like, no thanks. And makes every effort to like not have to be with him. Now, obviously, they have to spend some time together, but not really too much. See, the problem is, while Robert was away, Frances fell in love with the much older Robert Carr, who's the king's favourite. Now, as we said before in the George Villiers episode, the king's favourite is this political position. Like the king or queen, they'd have a favourite. It would be sort of a very coveted position in the court, because this would be the ruler's most intimate companion, and they would wield a lot of power, as one would see with Robert. Robert, like the favourite before him, Philip, he was such a fucking himbo. Like, himbos and the king really tend to sort of mix. So Robert actually becomes the king's favourite. Backstory. Robert becomes the king's favourite because his family knows James's family from back in Scotland. And there's this jousting competition because, you know, they like a party. There's a jousting competition happening at Hampton Court. And during one of the jousts, the knight, Sir Robert Carr, he gets injured and breaks his leg. So he has to like rest there. And knowing the family, knowing him from Scotland, King James decides to visit him. And then the visits get more frequent until the point where, when Robert is healed, he becomes appointed to the king's bedchamber and he becomes the king's favourite. Now, he gets sort of gifts and titles and money, and like he becomes sort of second in command and one of like the most prominent political players for many, many years. Now, Robert has a friend called Thomas Overbury. And Overbury was, like, he was noble, he was fine, but because he was friends, roommates, besties, wink, wink, they were intimate, okay? They were close. And because they were so close before, James was in the picture, but they'd stayed sort of allied. They stayed friends, and because they were such good buddies, people began to take interest in Overbury, and Overbury would end up sort of climbing the social ladder that way. So back to Frances a wee second. So Frances, she's like, I don't want to be in this marriage anymore. And she can't legally represent herself. So her dad and her uncle, like, they go in. And it's effectively an impotence trial, right? Because they want to get it annulled. And they're telling this 19-year-old fella, Robert Devereux, like, she says that she's, you know, tried to, like, get you interested in her. But, like, she's tried to perform her wifely duties, but the marriage has never been consummated. And she says, you can't get an erection, effectively. And Robert is so mad at this. He is so livid that what he does is, in front of his lawyers, is like he pulls like down his breeches and up his like blouse, his chemise or whatever the male version is. I'm not a fashion historian. Like, he pulls up his clothes and just sort of wiggles. He waves his like turgid member. He like waves his erect penis like at them, and he's like, look, I can get an erection. He's like, look, it works. It does work. But basically, a bunch of midwives have to inspect Frances, but she wears like a veil during the whole process, you know, to protect her modesty, because the priests and the doctors and the midwives have to check her, and they're like, her hymen's intact, which, as we know now, means absolutely fuck all. There is a suggestion that it was like her 14-year-old cousin who's brought in and is inspected, you know, in her place, because, you know, but there's no like truth to whether that's the case. But yeah, this marriage is just dissolved. Effectively, they agree it because he states that he can get an erection. Eventually it comes out. He's like, I can get it. I just can't seem to manage it with this chick. He's like, I can get it everywhere else. He said, but he said that he was so insulted by her because she called him a cow. And he was like, oh, she insulted me so much. I can't get hard. It's a shame. It just didn't work for them specifically. But he goes on to live his best life. They get annulled. Fabulous. Robert Carr, just hunky beefcake. Tim nice but dim. It's his closeness to the king which actually helps his annulment like finally go through, because the king passes the annulment. He's like, yeah, you can get married, bestie, absolutely. Because it's good. It's good to have, you know, you married off, even though I've annulled my marriage for you. Like, it's fine. Anyway. But before the annulment is granted, Sir Thomas Overbury, he's not happy because he doesn't like the Howards. He doesn't want this consolidation of power. He doesn't want them connected, right? So what he does is he writes this poem called The Wife, basically talking about the virtue of what a wife should have. And so he's writing, and it seems like a direct attack on, like, Francis Howard, because he's, like, trying to consistently convince, you know, Robert Carr, like, not to marry Francis, stay away from her, this isn't good for you, mainly because he's afraid of all the power, the more power that this fellow's going to have, and this family's going to have, and he's going to be ousted. So one thing leads to another, and Overbury ends up locked in the tower, right? And he's writing to Robert Carr. He's like, you know, they're saying this stuff about me. You need to help me, like, talk to the king, get me pardoned, like, help me out. And Robert does sweet fuck all. He just distances himself from it. And the only person who's showing him any kindness is dear sweet Francis Howard, who is sending him, you know, cakes and pies and tarts with lots of sugar, except it's not sugar. It's arsenic, allegedly. So all of these pies and treats and tarts start coming into the tower, and he's eating them, and he'll get a little bit sick, and then he'll get over it. So while he's in the tower, and he's just getting ill consistently. And it starts off with that. And then they're like, he's really sick. So he ends up getting apothecaries coming in, and he receives enemas. He receives a mercury enema, which was the cure, or the supposed cure, a treatment for the French pox, syphilis, right? So, you know, when he does die, people are like, he had venereal diseases. He died of that. And after he dies, like 10 days later or so, an annulment is granted. And the two get wed. So they get married and everything's fine. And they become like this incredibly, like, powerful. Like, a power couple. They become a power couple because they've got the king on their side and they've got, like, everything else going for them, because they're, again, from two very strong... Well, she's from a very strong political family, and he has gained all this power as the king's favourite. Now, Robert is starting to fall out of favour a wee bit after this. Not because he's married specifically, but because a lot of the other nobles aren't really happy with the fact that he is having all of this power. And so they start bringing in someone more malleable, who they think is going to be more malleable, the young George Villiers. And so they're like trying to bring him and put him in front of the king and push Robert Carr out. It doesn't help that Robert is being sort of whispered in the ear, and he's told to, like, mock Anne of Denmark, the king's wife. And one day he, like, straight up laughs at her dress in public. And she is so upset by this that she cries. This woman does not cry. let me tell you. And she's so mad about it. She's so mad about it that it's just like not going on. And she like basically tells King James, like, what the fuck? Sort him out. Like, I'm not having this. And so that's like a little sort of, the nail is starting to be hit into the coffin here. And so things are not going well. And, you know, the king is starting to get bored with Robert. And this leads to people kind of like trying to push things their way still. Rumours start to spread about Thomas Overbury and his time in the Tower. And so the rumours start swirling that there was a poison plot. And there's this guard at the Tower who's like, yeah, no, there was a plot, but I like totally stopped it. And then he's questioned a bit more. And then he's like, well, maybe I'm not actually sure that I stopped it. And then it comes to light that, you know, that these tarts came in and the enema, and a trial is heard. And so Robert Carr, he's like, I wasn't involved in this. I didn't do anything. I, you know, and like all these other, like people he's allied with come up and they're like, we didn't do it. It wasn't us. And then Frances Howard, Frances Carr, she now is, she comes to court and she's like, I fucking did it. Yes, I killed the bastard and I'd do it again. I mean, she said it nicer than that, obviously, but she basically confesses. She's like, yep, I poisoned the tarts. I got, you know, my ladies to bring in food to him and he didn't kill him. So then I met with an apothecary who like put some stuff in his like enema along with the mercury, you know, to finish him off. Right. And like, I love that she just comes out and she's like, I did it. I did it. Like, so they have to hold this trial and both of them are found guilty and banished from the Stuart court. So they're both banished, like. And it's interesting because they're banished and this gives the perfect opportunity for George Villiers to move up the ranks, right? But I think as well, this is like 2 years after Overbury's death. Like this all comes out. Now, Frances, she only spends like a couple months in like locked away and then she gets like a full pardon from the king. He's like, you're fine. Off you go. Now, eventually Robert Carr also gets pardoned, like after spending some time in the Tower of London. So these two are hanging out in the Tower of London separately, of course, the same place where Overbury was poisoned. Now, how do I put this? There's a possibility that there was some royal involvement in this because there were times where either of the monarchs could have stepped in and just like got involved because like Woods, who was sort of one of the favourites of Anne of Denmark, like he was sort of wrapped up in this sort of scheme and plot. So, you know, it's likely that she knew about it, but she just didn't do anything because she found him annoying. Now, I'm not saying that she was like giving her stamp of approval on it. It's more like she just looked away in the opposite direction. But yeah, apparently Overbury was causing issues. Like initially, like they tried to send him like away because he was causing so much trouble. They were like, hey, here's an ambassadorship to Russia, which by the way, he was involved in a civil war at the time. And he was like, no, I'm not going to fucking Russia. Fuck that for a game of soldiers. And so the king is so mad about it. So this coupled with like this whole poem on the wife gets him locked in the Tower. And the queen's like, well, you know what? That's what you get. So, you know, nobody really cared. It was only when sort of the nobility were getting mad about it that they actually cared about the entire scandal, which is pretty funny in the grand scheme of things. Now, because the royals like were implicated in this scandal, that they basically had to banish the two from court, so they get sent to the Tower. Frances, she gets pardoned basically straight away, like a couple months and she's pardoned, but she's still in the Tower. And then like 2 years later, himself is pardoned. And he refused to like buy his pardon. Like people were like, oh, we'll talk on your behalf if you give a shit. And he's like, no. But yeah, and they basically leave court and they go and live their lives. And yeah, you know, have like one child, I think. But yeah, they have a life, and yeah, they were okay in the end. And that's the story of the Overbreak scandal poisoning situation. If you liked my retelling of this story, please feel free to rate and review 5 stars. Just because my ego needs it at this point in my life. I'm so disheartened. I'm struggling. But yeah, you can follow me on all the socials, and I have some recommendations for you now. For reading, I'm going to say Betwixt the Sheets by Dr. Kate Lister. It's a fun, fabulous read. For watching, the new Fallout series, dear God, I need more of it in my life. It's broken the video game curse. And for listening, it's not Betwixt the Sheets. That's the name of the podcast of Dr. Kate Lister, which you should also listen to, actually. Reading is History of Sex, The Curious History of Sex by Kate Lister. You know what? Two Kate Listers and a Fallout. Live your best life. I'm actually really that person who, whenever anyone says Kate Lister, I go, Doctor. Like people say Captain Jack Sparrow. I'm like, Dr. Kate Lister. But anyway, I hope you have a fabulous time, and I will see you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. Adios, au revoir, au revoir, my friends. Bye-bye.